From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, U.S. President Barack Obama urges faster reforms in Myanmar. We get analysis about the Beijing meeting between Mr. Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping.
This meeting has really produced some deliverables.
And a U.S. community helps low-income families obtain healthier food. It's all ahead. I'm Sarah Williams. President Barack Obama is raising thorny issues as he meets with Myanmar's government and opposition leaders on his second visit to the country, also known as Burma. Mr. Obama started his visit attending a summit of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, which Myanmar is hosting this year. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez is traveling with the president and has this report from Myanmar's capital, Naypyidaw.
A song and dance show and a gala dinner for heads of state in a slick new convention center showed how far Myanmar has come since emerging from decades of military rule and international isolation. President Obama praised Myanmar and its leader, Thein Sein, for hosting the gathering.
President Thein Sein, I want to thank you for your hospitality and for bringing together this excellent summit. I think Myanmar has done a tremendous job chairing ASEAN this year and has shown solid leadership on issues of critical importance to the entire region.
But after attending meetings on regional cooperation, Mr. Obama got to the more substantial part of his agenda, promoting political reforms in Myanmar that he says have not come as fast as many had hoped 4 years ago when the country began its transition from decades of military rule. In an interview with a Myanmar magazine, the president said that in the 2 years since his first visit in 2012, he has seen progress that includes economic reforms, the release of political prisoners, and the beginnings of a constitutional reform movement. But Mr. Obama said there has also been some backsliding. Former political prisoners continue to deal with restrictions, while journalists are still facing killings, arrests, and harassment. One area of special concern for the U.S. leader is the condition of the Rohingya people, a Muslim minority of more than 1 million, most of whom do not have citizenship. Thousands have been forced to live in camps following clashes with Buddhists in 2012 in Rakhine State. The issue of citizenship for Rohingyas is politically sensitive in Myanmar. Still, the U.S. president planned to bring it up in meetings with both the government and the opposition, including the renowned Aung San Suu Kyi, who Mr. Obama plans to see in Yangon on Friday, and who has been criticized for not taking a stand on the issue. The president's deputy national security advisor, Ben Rhodes, told reporters here a transition to a stable democracy is not possible without addressing the Rohingya question.
We recognize that this is a very complex issue here in Burma, that there are deeply held views, that there are contested views of history, but that doesn't change the fact that there are certain fundamental universal rights that need to apply for all people.
After meeting with Aung San Suu Kyi on Friday, the president heads to Brisbane, Australia for the G20 summit, where the subject of Ukraine will likely dominate discussions on the sidelines. Aides say President Obama expects to hold talks with European leaders following evidence this week that Russia continues to send equipment and troops across the border into Ukraine. Among the leaders attending the G20 summit will be Russian President Vladimir Putin. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Naypyidaw.
Meanwhile, President Obama's three-day trip to China, including participation in the 21-nation Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum in Beijing, ended Wednesday with talks with his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. Bonnie Glaser, China expert at the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that, as in their last encounter in June 2013 in California, high-level engagement can move the U.S.-China relationship forward.
I think both sides had actually set expectations low for this meeting and exceeded them. Whereas at Sunnylands in June last year, most of what was achieved was an improved atmosphere and some important rhetoric about a consensus to create a new type of major power relationship. This meeting has really produced some deliverables. It has underscored that despite the differences between the United States and China, they can work together where their interests overlap. And that is why I think we've seen some agreements this time on bilateral military confidence-building measures to avoid an accident between naval ships operating in close proximity, an agreement on climate change where both presidents agree that they should try and lower their carbon emissions, the visa agreement to promote people-to-people exchanges and make it easier for businessmen, tourists, and others to go from one nation to the other, and, of course, the Information Technology Agreement, which has not been updated since 1996 and really needed to incorporate a whole new set of products that have been developed since then. And that agreement will now go to the WTO for discussion. So I think it's a very substantive summit.
The two countries, of course, maintain disagreements. None of that seemed to come through in their closing statements.
Well, the disagreements, I think, are certainly discussed privately, but they have not been emphasized publicly. President Obama did refer once, at least, in the press conference to concerns about cybersecurity, and I'm sure that in private he continued to convey American concern about the use of cyber to steal trade secrets. Certainly there was a lengthy discussion about maritime security issues and human rights. So these are some of the contentious areas. But what really struck me about the press conference was the effort by both presidents to provide some reassurance to the other president and to the publics on the other side. So, for example, President Obama said that he wanted to debunk the notion that the United States is seeking to contain China. President Xi Jinping said that he didn't think that the United States was trying to exclude China from any regional integration process. That, of course, means TPP. And then his comments about the inclusiveness of his proposals about regional security and cooperative security suggests that he was trying to assuage American concerns about what has been referred to as Asia for Asians, the statement that he made at the Conference on Interaction and Confidence Building Measures earlier this year. So I see both presidents as trying to reassure the other, address the other side's concern, and to try and eliminate where there has been some misunderstanding.
Bonnie Glaser says, given the number of agreements reached, the meetings put the Sino-American relationship on a more positive footing for at least the final 2 years of President Obama's time in office. Scott Harold, a RAND Corporation political scientist, says while he agrees the relationship appears more positive, the real test will be results from the agreements reached.
There have been announcements on, let's say, four big issues, kind of the climate change issue, military relations, the trade issue with respect to technology, and the visas issue. Those could be very substantive if they prove to represent a genuine commitment to deepening contact and cooperation. Or they could be largely symbolic and atmospherics. I think the interesting question over the next weeks and months will be, does the spirit that has been projected from the APEC meetings and the president's summit with Xi Jinping, does that continue to translate into positive engagements between the U.S. and China, or does something happen in the near term or even medium term, i.e. the next several weeks to next several months, that undercuts or reinforces the more competitive dynamics in the relationship? I think that the last time we had this with the Sunnyland Summit in 2013, just a few months later, we saw the announcement of an air defense identification zone by China over the Senkaku Islands that was highly destabilizing and very unwelcome as a development from the U.S. and Japanese perspectives, and frankly, many countries in Asia. If we don't see things like that, and we continue to see developments that build on the relationship here, and one of the ones that I think we could see would be continued Chinese engagement with the Iranians to convince Iran to live up to its nuclear agreement, and another would be if China were to return to the cyber dialogue, those would be things that would show that maybe there's some real meat on the bones, and maybe the U.S. and China can cooperate despite the competitive aspects of their relationship, and even work to minimize those while building the more cooperative and collaborative elements of the relationship. But I think it remains to be seen.
And Sun Zhe, head of the Center for U.S.-China Relations at Beijing's Tsinghua University, says the bilateral relationship is mature enough that even if there's no political trust for another 5 to 10 years, the two countries must live and work together. The New York Times is vowing not to alter its coverage of China after President Xi Jinping appeared to confirm Beijing is punishing foreign news outlets for publishing critical stories. President Xi's comments came Wednesday during the news conference alongside Mr. Obama in Beijing. When asked by a Times reporter why foreign journalists had difficulties obtaining visas, Mr. Xi suggested the reporters themselves were to blame, saying media outlets need to obey China's laws and regulations.
When a car breaks down on the road, perhaps we need to get off the car to see where the problem lies. And when a certain issue is raised as a problem, there must be a reason. In Chinese, we have a saying, the party which has created a problem should be the one to help resolve it. So perhaps we should look into the problem to see where the cause lies.
China has repeatedly failed to issue visas for Times reporters and blocked access to the paper's English and Chinese language sites. The moves were widely interpreted as retaliation for a series of stories exposing alleged wealth accumulated by the country's leaders and their families. In a statement Wednesday, the Times editorial board said Mr. Xi's message was clear. He was warning foreign news organizations that their troubles are self-inflicted. They're being penalized for unfavorable or controversial news coverage. When pressed about the matter during a briefing today, Foreign Ministry spokesman Hong Lei also refused to elaborate on how the journalists broke the law. He said, I think the open environment provided by China towards journalists is recognized by all. It is for the doers to undo what he has done. Those people should reflect on that. Peter Ford, the president of the Foreign Correspondents Club of China, tells VOA the president's comments were opaque but meant to send a clear message.
Did he mean that reporters should expect to be denied a visa if their newspaper publishes articles that the Chinese government doesn't like? If that's the case, I'd say that the problem is not so much with the car, it's with the potholes in the road that we have to drive on here.
China has defended its policies by saying it gives vastly more access to foreign reporters than it did in past decades before it began its process of opening up to the outside world.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. In a scientific first, a spacecraft has landed on a comet. The European Space Agency's Philae lander touched down on the 67P comet. It caps a decade-long mission of the agency's Rosetta spacecraft. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
It was celebration time at the European Space Agency's mission control in Darmstadt, Germany. After tense hours monitoring their computer screens, controllers finally got the signals they were hoping for, showing that the 100-kilogram Philae spacecraft had landed on Comet 67P. The touchdown is a first in space history. It's a proud moment for European space research and, as ESA Director General Jean-Jacques Dourdan pointed out, for mankind.
This is a big step for human civilization. And because this is science, scientist, knowledge, and that this is certainly terrestrial intelligence.
The landing is the culmination of a 10-year, 6-billion-kilometer journey across space by ESA's Rosetta spacecraft to reach the comet. Another first came in August as Rosetta went into orbit around the comet. By exploring 67P, scientists hope to get insights into the earliest phases of our solar system and maybe into the origins of life on Earth. Rosetta and the Philae craft have cameras and nearly 24 instruments to probe the comet's surface and to analyze the material below it. Among other questions, scientists want to know whether comets brought organic matter and water to our planet billions of years ago. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The United States federal government offers benefits to some people living in poverty so they can buy food for their families. The program is called the Supplemental Nutritious Assistance Program, or SNAP. SNAP benefits have been used primarily in large chain supermarkets. But now some farmers in Northern Virginia have begun accepting SNAP benefits. Using SNAP dollars, participants can buy fresh local produce at farmers markets, even seeds to start their own gardens. Faiza Al-Masri reports in this story, narrated by Faith Lapidus.
Since she lost her job more than a year ago, Maureen Blake has been coming more regularly to the plot she rents in the local community garden. With the help of her kids, she has a harvest every week.
Every week when I go and pick up my food, I have just wonderful fresh produce. But I've been getting about 4 or 5 cucumbers every week, you know, 6 to 8 zucchini of varying sizes. There's always tons of Swiss chard and lettuce.
All this food would cost a fair amount in a grocery store, but Blake decided to grow her own. She bought the seedlings at her local farmer's market. Each plant, which can cost as little as $3, can produce pounds of vegetables.
We're just eating fresh vegetables we never would have discovered or had before.
Because she earns so little, Blake gets money from SNAP. She's able to grow fresh produce because in the past year, local farmers markets have begun accepting SNAP dollars.
When I heard that, I went out to the farmers market in Leesburg and purchased plants and planted them in the plot that I had.
SNAP recipients can buy plants or seeds from market vendors, says Catherine Willis, Leesburg farmers market spokeswoman, or they can buy fresh produce.
When a customer comes in, they bring us their EBT card, their SNAP card, and it's run just like a credit card through the machine. If they want $10 off of their card, then we run it through the machine. They have $10 taken off of their card, and we give them $10 worth of wooden tokens, and then they can use those with any of the vendors in the market.
According to Amanda Huffman, healthy living advocate for the Loudoun County Health Department, the program's goal is to teach families how to stay in good health.
The children in Loudoun County who are uninsured or who have families in a lower poverty level, they are growing in obesity, and that is contributing to chronic disease. So being able to help them learn one bit at a time what it means to eat well is a beautiful thing. And helping them get excited about walking through the market with their parents, that's an activity as well as learning about food.
Shopping at the farmer's market encourages parents and kids to make better dietary choices.
Any vegetable is better than none. But when you're looking at the choice between a bag of chips or a bag of fresh apples, that's a great option.
That's what Maureen Blake's daughter, Caitlin, is learning.
I noticed with our picking your sister, planting your own vegetables really helps her. She gets really excited about it. She's like, oh, yes, I planted the zucchini. Now I get to cook it. You spent, like, a day cooking all the zucchini.
Good after, long after.
That's changed the way the family eats.
What it does change is your diet, because you end up cooking and being creative and learning all sorts of things.
And the lessons these kids are learning here are likely to nourish them forever. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thank you for joining us today for International Edition. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
This is Today in History. On November 13, 354, Augustine of Hippo, Algerian bishop and theologian, was born. Augustine is considered one of the most important figures in the history of the Christian Church. In 1775, during the War of Independence from Britain, American troops briefly captured the British-held Canadian city of Montreal. Weeks later, the American incursion ended following a defeat at the hands of the British. On this day in 1850, Scottish novelist, essayist, and poet Robert Louis Stevenson was born. Stevenson contributed several classic works of children's literature, including Treasure Island and The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. In 1942, American and Japanese naval forces fought in the First Naval Battle of Guadalcanal in the Southwest Pacific. Both sides suffered heavy losses in the nighttime battle, but the Japanese attackers were forced to retreat. In 1956, the U.S. Supreme Court declared Alabama's racial segregation laws unconstitutional, coming just 2 years after the landmark Brown v. Board of Education case involving racially segregated public schools. The decision prompted civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. to end a year-long bus boycott in Montgomery. In 1970, a tidal wave and storm surge caused by a cyclone killed over 200,000 people in East Pakistan, now Bangladesh. In 1971, the U.S. Mariner 9 unmanned spacecraft became the first man-made object to orbit another planet, sending back clear pictures of the Martian surface. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned over intensified attacks by pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. Over the past several days, heavy shelling has occurred in Donetsk, contravening a ceasefire that was agreed to by Russia, Ukraine, and Russia-backed rebels in the Minsk agreements signed September 5th and September 19th. In a statement, White House National Security Council spokesperson Bernadette Meehan also expressed concern over numerous reports, including those from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, that Russian-backed and supplied separatists are moving large convoys of heavy weapons and tanks to the front lines of the conflict. On November 8th, the OSCE reported that its Donetsk-based monitors had observed convoys of dozens of unmarked heavy weapons and tanks containing personnel in dark green uniforms without insignia moving through the territory. That report followed claims by the Kiev government that Moscow was sending troops and tanks across the border to aid the rebels. The OSCE confirmed a recent increase in Russian troops and equipment along the eastern border of Ukraine and said that Russia continues to demonstrate its lack of regard for international agreements and its determination to further destabilize Ukraine. At a press briefing November 10th, State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki said that pro-Russian separatists in the Donbas region seem intent on making gains well beyond the lines agreed to in Minsk. There are no excuses, she insisted, for these ongoing and blatant violations of the Minsk Protocol by Russia and its proxies. If Russia is truly committed to peace in Ukraine, spokesperson Psaki said, it will stop fueling the fire with new weapons and support for separatists and withdraw all Russian military personnel and equipment from Ukraine and will call on its proxies to stop ceasefire violations, release hostages, and close the international border.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.